geopolitical tensions growing to a fever pitch over the war in Ukraine, with Russia booting out dozens of German diplomats. UN rights experts blame the U.S. for making Afghan women suffer more by freezing billions of dollars worth of Afghan funds. Plus, Hezbollah says Israel has targeted several areas in southern Lebanon with artillery fire. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. The cycle of diplomatic expulsions is relentlessly continuing between the West and Russia. In yet another tit-for-tat measure, Moscow has declared 40 German diplomatic staff in Russia persona non grata. In a statement, the Russian Foreign Ministry said it had summoned German ambassador and handed him a note. The ministry said it was a, quote, symmetrical response to Berlin's decision to expel 40 Russian diplomats earlier this month. Moscow dismissed allegations by the German foreign minister that Russian diplomats had been working against German freedom and cohesion of society. Germany, however, says the expulsion of its diplomats is in no way justified. Political tensions have been soaring between Moscow and the West since Russia launched a war on Ukraine. The U.S., the EU, and their allies have since expelled hundreds of Russian diplomats, with Moscow responding in kind. Russia warns the United States and its allies against supplying more weapons to Ukraine, saying the move is fanning the flames of the war. The Russian ambassador to Washington, Anatoly Antonov, says Moscow sees massive deliveries of arms to Ukraine as an attempt to aggravate the situation and bring about more losses. Antonov says Russia has sent an official diplomatic note of concern to Washington regarding the issue, but has so far received no reply. His comments come after the U.S. Secretaries of State and Defense said that Washington is prepared to increase its military support for Ukraine.
They need long-range fires. You've heard them express a need for tanks. And we are doing everything that we can to get them the types of support, the types of artillery and munitions that will be effective in this stage of the fight. We're going to push as hard as we can, as quickly as we can, to get them what they need.
What I'm seeing, at least, is that aid is getting here and other distribution points. It's getting out the door incredibly quickly. Again, this place is going to look different 5 or 6 hours from now than it does right now.
Antony Blinken and Lloyd Austin made these comments near the Ukrainian border in Poland. They visited Kiev on Sunday night and met with President Volodymyr Zelensky. During the meeting, the two officials pledged more than $700 million in additional direct and indirect military aid to Ukraine. They also cited U.S. President Joe Biden as saying that American diplomats would return to Ukraine as soon as this week. It was the highest-level U.S. visit to Ukraine since the start of the Russian war on February the 24th. Russia's President Vladimir Putin says the West plot to assassinate a prominent journalist in the country has been foiled.
This morning, the Federal Security Service stopped the activities of a terrorist group that planned to attack and kill one famous Russian TV journalist. Of course, they will deny the accusations, but the facts and evidence are irrefutable. Fooling their citizens using their monopoly in media in their countries and some other ones, but experiencing a fiasco here in Russia, they have proceeded to terror, to preparing the murder of our journalists.
Putin did not elaborate further, but indirectly pointed the finger at the U.S. spy agency, saying the CIA is attempting to undermine Russia. Separately, Russia's Federal Security Service, in a statement, reported the arrests of several members of a neo-Nazi terror group. The detainees were said to be acting on behalf of Ukrainian spies to kill TV anchor Vladimir Soloyev. The FSB said fake Ukrainian passports, arms, drugs, and bombs were recovered from the detainees. Solovyov is a supporter of Russia's military campaign in Ukraine. However, Ukraine's State Security Service has denied having any plans to kill him.
This morning, the Federal Security
The European Union remains divided over an embargo on Russian energy imports as the bloc looks to impose a sixth package of sanctions against Moscow. EU Foreign Affairs Chief Joseph Borrell says there is no significant support from all member states for full sanctions against Russian oil and gas. He said all EU countries are working to cut their dependency on Russian energy imports, so the ban will happen at some point. Some EU members, including Germany, oppose an immediate embargo on Russia's energy. Berlin says a sudden cutoff will send all of Europe into a recession. The bloc is set to hold a summit at the end of this month to further discuss the issue. Earlier, a top EU diplomat said the Union is preparing smart sanctions against Moscow to maximize pressure on Russia while minimizing damage to the bloc. A group of independent UN experts says the U.S. is making life worse for Afghan women by freezing billions of dollars worth of the country's assets. The statement was jointly issued by 14 experts appointed by the Geneva-based Human Rights Council. They said countries, including the U.S., are obliged by international law to ensure that their activities do not result in rights violations. The experts noted that they have relayed their concerns and recommendations to Washington but have not received a reply. The UN experts also blame the ruling Taliban's, quote, widening gender-based discrimination for deteriorating women's rights. They said the current humanitarian crisis, where 23 million are reliant on food aid, is having a disproportionate impact on women and children. Israeli artillery shells southern Lebanon after a projectile allegedly fired from there hit northern occupied territories. Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has confirmed the attack. The Israeli military claims a rocket was fired from southern Lebanon and fell near the Israeli town of Sholmi. On Sunday night, it says that the rocket landed in an open area and that no rocket siren was activated. Small Palestinian factions in Lebanon sporadically fired projectiles on Israel in retaliation for the regime's crimes and deadly crackdown in occupied Palestinian territories. Following the flare-up, the United Nations interim force in Lebanon urged calm and restraint. Our Beirut correspondent Mariam Saleh, who joined us earlier with an update, says there were no casualties from the Israeli shelling of Lebanon.
Up until now, no human casualties. Even the shelling that occurred was mainly in like we said, open areas, and it was just the feel of terror for some children. Last night was Laylat al-Qadr, people were awake, it's Ramadan. So that was reminiscent for many people who had lived the Israeli times of aggressions, of continuous aggressions, that this shelling continued. Of course, this proves to us once more that the Israelis are still calculating their moves, because they know that there will be a resistance, Hezbollah's resistance will retaliate if they do try to cross the red line of going anywhere near civilian or residential areas.
Protests erupt in the French capital after incumbent Emmanuel Macron wins the Sunday runoff presidential vote. Voters who backed Macron's far-right contender, Marine Le Pen, gathered in central Paris after she was beaten with a comfortable margin of 16%. Clashes erupted after police fired tear gas at the protesters. Officers also fired tear gas and charged at protesters in Lyon after demonstrators staged a march and threw fireworks at a police car. Le Pen has admitted defeat but has promised to continue the fight. European leaders were quick to congratulate Macron. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said the 27-nation bloc can count on France for five more years, and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said Macron's re-election is a vote of confidence in Europe.
French President Emmanuel Macron has been re-elected in a comfortable victory defeating the national rally's Marine Le Pen, just like in 2017. 6 years after Brexit and the election of Donald Trump, France has still not had a shock victory which opposes right-wing economics and globalization. Macron's victory will be celebrated by high finance in Brussels and by the so-called bourgeois bloc, who are his core supporters. However, the Yellow Vests have said for months that they view a Macron victory as intolerable and as a call to social battle.
We had 3 years of a struggle but couldn't get Macron out of power. It shows that there is no solution possible by the ballot, only on the streets. Many people will be quite desperate, so things could turn towards extreme social instability and maybe civil war.
Le Pen did see a major rise in support as compared with 2017, but the nationalist bloc still fell short. It seems that many voters simply could not vote in favor of even a rebranded National Front, whose far-right record goes back decades. Abstention hit 28%, the highest since 1969. Blank or purposely spoiled ballots are estimated to be an additional 12%. The populist bloc, who apparently wanted neither candidate, made their presence felt by denying Macron a convincing victory in terms of the overall electorate.
The biggest revolution to come will be philosophical and intellectual. We need a new way of thinking, a new way of being French, and we need a new France. With Le Pen or Macron, we were sure to lose our democratic rights and personal freedoms, and that's unacceptable to many.
Just like in 2017, Macron is likely to face calls that his victory is not a mandate for his proposed policies, such as raising the retirement age this fall. That means the country is likely to experience continued social unrest, which was unprecedented in Macron's first term. France's political future usually first surfaces in their neo-imperial colonies, like with the Yellow Vests. For the first time, the far right won most of France's overseas territories in what could be a preview of 2027. Rami Mazahari, Paris.
We've asked journalist and political analyst Ali Jemanier about whether French President Emmanuel Macron will be able to solve the problems of people that the problems that people are dealing with during his second term in office.
The real problem is exactly identified by President Emmanuel Macron himself when he said that he knows that a large number of French people did not vote for him to support him, but to prevent Marine Le Pen from reaching the power. Therefore, many people don't want him, and that was manifested in the first round when he got only 27%. So all the rest that he got between 27 and 58 is the difference that other groups choose Macron because he was the less bad than Le Pen, because he failed to fulfill his program. He failed all the domestic issues that are most important for the French population rather than international policy.
People in different countries take to the streets to express solidarity with Palestinians who are facing an intensifying Israeli crackdown. In Germany, hundreds of protesters wave the Palestinian flag and carried banners in support of the Palestinian people. Similar rallies were held in the UK on Sunday. Demonstrators called for international action, including sanctions, to end Israel's growing aggression and occupation of Palestinian territories. Jews also joined the rallies in the British capital, London, denounced the Israeli atrocities and torched the regime's flags. Post-day rallies were also planned to be held in the US, Australia, and Canada. The last Friday of Ramadan is designated as International Quds Day. In some countries, the occasion is observed on the last Sunday of the holy month. Amid ongoing Israeli aggression against Al-Aqsa in occupied Al-Quds, Hundreds of activists have taken to London Street to mark annual Qudsi. The day has been a target of pro-Israel lobby attempts to ban the protests. Despite this, London organizers have succeeded in keeping the event going, preserving the legacy of Imam Khomeini. Robert Carter reports from London.
Hundreds of protesters flocked to central London on Sunday to honour the call of International Quds Day. The annual event, held on the last weekend of Ramadan, was initiated by the Islamic Republic of Iran in 1979 to express solidarity for Palestinians and staunch opposition to Zionism.
Israeli aggression against Palestinians during the holy month of Ramadan has become so regular that it's turned almost regrettably into an annual tradition. That's why tensions are so high this year, as continued aggression against the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound is ongoing even at the time of this recording.
Due to its popularity, many attempts have been made by pro-Israel groups to ban the rally, with critics citing anti-Semitism accusations. Event supporters, however, rubbished these claims.
The Al-Quds demonstration is in support of the Palestinians in their fight against Zionism. Zionism is a totally different philosophy to Judaism. Zionism is a false, secular philosophy. Judaism is an age-old religion. Being against Zionism is being against falsehood. Nothing to do with anti-Semitism at all.
The very fact that the protest movement is being criminalized and there are efforts to ban it, I think that speaks volumes. They don't want concepts of resistance to be spoken about. Like, I'm not sure if you realize in some of the protests, there's an emphasis on 1, 2, 3, 4, occupation no more, but not an emphasis on 5, 6, 7, 8, Israel is a terrorist state, right? It's like, we have solidarity with the oppressed Palestinians. We call out their victimhood, but we also target the aggressor.
The Al-Aqsa Mosque compound has been at the centre of weeks of heightened Israeli violence against Palestinian worshippers since the beginning of the Holy Month. With at least 19 Palestinians killed so far, fears remain high that another full-scale war could break out as Gaza's resistance threatens greater retaliation. Robert Carter, London.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en. From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Closer, Iran.
Hello. I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. I am now in Tehran, standing by the Chitgar River.
When you live in a busy, crowded city like Tehran, then walking by this artificial river could be very enjoyable. Of course, nothing is like a natural scenery. It's been for a long time that I haven't had a tour to the beautiful nature of Iran, and honestly, I really miss those amazing sceneries. So, today I'm going to take a tour to Bandar Mahshahr in southern Iran in order to visit the beautiful region of Horemusa. I'm sure you'll like it. Horemusa is one of the firths of the Persian Gulf. Hor, literally firth, means a long, narrow indentation of the seacoast. Horemusa is a triangular firth northwest of the Persian Gulf. Horemusa is 20 to 50 meters deep. However, its depth reaches 73 meters in some points. This depth has made it possible for the ships weighing up to 70,000 tons to easily move along this canal. Horemusa has small branches on its western side. The oil tankers which move toward Bandar Imam Khomeini have to sail through Horemusa. This canal is one of the most important natural canals of Iran. North of this canal, there are Bandar Imam Khomeini, Bandar Mahshahr, Sarbandar, and Petrochemical Special Economic Zone of Mahshahr. I am now at Bandar Mahshahr. The weather is pleasant, though a little bit humid. Horemusa is connected to the Persian Gulf, and I feel really excited to see it. Here's the magnificent Persian Gulf. The smell that comes from the Persian Gulf is the most pleasant scent I've ever experienced in whole of my life. Here we have the Persian Gulf and Horemusa. Let's get closer to the sea. Here. Actually, Horemusa has a diverse flora and fauna. The fauna includes humpback dolphins, flamingos, crested terns, sternidaes, small crabs, and fish of different types, as well as lots of beds of different types, which are hard to count. Because of its unique nature, Horemusa is an ideal tourist attraction for nature lovers. Oh my God, look at there! Several dolphins are playing at a far distance. I have to ride in a boat in order to see them very well. Dolphins don't approach the seacoast. The reflection of the sun ray on the dolphin's skin makes you think that each time that one of them jumps out of the water, a piece of gold is jumping. Oh, I can't take my eyes off all the beauties of the Persian Gulf. Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
My dear brothers and sisters in Iman, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Today, as we go through this blessed month of Ramadan, I want to continue and actually speak about the blessed month. And so today I want to talk about how the month of Ramadan can be a complete transformation in our lives. Obviously, as believers, we know the fact that Ramadan, the month of Ramadan, is not like any other month. And even really the non-believers who understand even a small amount about Islam, they recognize this fact. And even if you go on to some of the social media platforms, you'll see even non-believers taking the challenge to fast Ramadan, 1 day, 3 days, 7 days, the entire month. Some of them recognize the beauty of the fasting, the importance of it, the uniqueness of this event, and so they try to put themselves in the feet of a believer and try to go through the same routine and rituals that we experience, that we are obligated to go through. And one of the things as Muslims that we always should appreciate is the fact that Ramadan is meant to be a complete transformation of our lives. And this is seen in the ahadith of the Prophet of Islam, the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. And it's also seen in the words of his successors, the Ahlul Bayt, may Allah's blessings be upon all of them. And I just want to give us one example from the Quran of how our life will change, and how the fourth Imam, Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam, also spoke about Ramadan and the life-changing time that we are going through. So in the Quran, and we all know this verse, if we're believers and we have experienced Ramadan, we have probably memorized this verse from chapter number 2, Surah Al-Baqarah, verse 183, where Allah says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم يا أيها الذين آمنوا كتب عليكم الصيام كما كتب على الذين من قبلكم لعلكم تتقون. O you who believe, fasting has been prescribed for you, just as it was prescribed for those who came before you, so that perhaps you may deserve God's protection against the temptations of your carnal soul and attain piety, reach this level of what we call taqwa. Taqwa, that trait which allows us to recognize our responsibility at every given time in our lives, whether we're at home or at work or at school or in the malls or outside in public. Taqwa is that force that keeps us under control, that keeps us in check, that allows us to not break the laws of God, to do what is right in every instance, that we don't have to second guess it or think about doing good. It just will come naturally to us. And this is what is one of the main goals of Ramadan, actually. And that's why it's a transformative time for us. Now, that doesn't mean that the rest of the 11 months of the year we are free to do as we want and to sin and to openly disregard the laws of the Creator. But we're expected, at least in these 30 days and nights, to make a change, a forced change in our character, in our behavior, in our actions, with the hopes and the prayers that that will then carry over into the rest of the year. Will that happen? Well, God says at the end of the verse, لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَّقُونَ. لَعَلَّ in Arabic, and it may not be rendered in the English of the verse by translators, but it really means perhaps, maybe. It's a possibility. So God did not say that fasting has been prescribed until the end of the verse so that you will definitely attain taqwa, that it's like 100% given that you do one thing and you deserve or you get another. Because there are many aspects to the month of Ramadan and fasting, and just keeping away from the 9 or 10 things which our jurists mention are impermissible is just one of the aspects. But it's the goal of the month of Ramadan that hopefully through all of these struggles we put ourselves through for 30 days and nights, waking up early for the pre-dawn meal, staying up late for iftar, late into the night in some communities, depriving ourselves of sleep, depriving ourselves of food and water, and of the other things which are impermissible for a believer in the daytime hours. Hopefully through all of this self-discipline, training of the soul, that we can reach to that level that God wants us to reach to. And God willing, I pray that we all can reach to that level this Ramadan. I'm sure many of us thought, well, COVID would go away in a few months last year, and here we are 1 year later, in the same position that we are last year. Will we have another year of COVID Ramadan? Maybe. I don't want to get our hopes up and say that, you know, the vaccines are going to be, you know, 100% successful, because we see, we don't see that right now, unfortunately. So let me move on. So we've seen this verse. Now, what does the fourth Imam, Imam Zain al-Abidin, peace be upon him, what does he say about Ramadan? Now, this is taken from his very beautiful supplication that he would recite at the beginning of the month of Ramadan. And I'm just going to give you one line of a few portions in it, where he says that this month of Ramadan, he says, الشهر السيام وشهر الإسلام وشهر الطهور وشهر التمحيس وشهر القيام. This complete transformation in our lives, brothers and sisters, as I just previously said from the verse of Surah Al-Baqarah, carries over in how the fourth Imam now explains Ramadan to us. A, it's Shahr al-Siyam, the month of fasting. And fasting, as I'll just mention briefly when I move on a bit later, is not just not eating and drinking or smoking or whatever else our scholars have determined from the Ahadith. It is much more deeper than that. It's Shahr al-Islam, the month of submission. Because as you know, that when Imam Ali alayhi salam was asked to describe Islam, he said, Al-Islamu huwa taslim. This Islam is submission. And we're submitting to God. We're not going and indulging in the luxuries that we normally would have enjoyed. We would have been eating right now, perhaps, having something to drink. Right now, those things are impermissible for the majority of us who are not, or who are in a state of fasting. So we're submitting to God by not doing something, by not eating, not drinking, and so on and so forth. It's also Shahr al-Tuhur, the month of purity, right? Because this is meant to be a purification, not a detox that you fast, like your doctor will tell you to fast, or before you go for blood work, you'd have a fast. No, this is a different level of purification, although there is a physical component of fasting as well. But it is a spiritual detox from the time that we live in and being surrounded by sin and maybe even performing sins. But we all try and make it a point in Ramadan. I'm sure we all do, to, even though we may commit acts which are not allowed the rest of the year, we try at least for 30 days to keep away from those. It's also Shahr al-Tamhis, as the Imam says. It's a month of being put to the test. And when you study the methodology of how to fast, you have to admit that this is a test by God that not everybody will fulfill. There may be people who have lost connectivity with God, unfortunately. And as such, they don't fast in Ramadan, unfortunately. God willing, and I pray to that God will allow you to begin to heal that relationship and to bring back the fast in your life and praying and whatever else may be missing. But fasting is a test from the divine. And as the Imam says, it was Shahr al-Qiyam, the month of standing in prayer. Again, it's a month of where we engage in extra prayers at night or in the day. Extra supplications, the du'as, are further prayed in this blessed month of Ramadan.
Dear listeners of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, you can follow this program entitled Minbar every day in the month of Ramadan. If you have any suggestion, you can send us your email at englishradio@irib.ir.
Love is everywhere, so much peace fills up the air. Ramadan, month of the Quran, I feel it inside me, strengthening my iman. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Iran's envoy to the United Nations, Majid Takht-Ravanchi, speaking at the UN Security Council session on Afghanistan recently, said Tehran had done all in its power to support refugees from Afghanistan over the past four decades, despite harsh sanctions. We now present you an article written by Sayed Zafar Mahdi, a Tehran-based journalist, editor, blogger, and author, under the heading, Rabble Rousers Sowing Seeds of Discord Between Iran and Afghanistan. In today's interconnected world, everything is a just a click away, including violent public disturbances. In recent days, social media has been inundated with fake videos purportedly showing the mistreatment of Afghan refugees in Iran. The unverified videos have circulated at a dizzying pace, fueled anger and sparked some protests by unknown men in the neighboring country, including attacks on Iran's diplomatic missions in Kabul and in Herat in Afghanistan. Afghan refugees always were warmly welcomed in Iran since the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Thus, it is a sheer lie to suggest that Afghan refugees in Iran are in any manner exploited or terrorized by the people or by the government. Some of the posts doing rounds on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram these days smell of foul play, making it emphatically clear that there is method to this madness. It's nothing new or astonishing, though, A tiny minority of troublemongers with divisive agendas have always been hell-bent on manufacturing crises between the two brotherly nations of Iran and Afghanistan. Most of the time, the flames have been fanned by forces inimical to peace and to stability in the region. The latest row was triggered by an incident at the highly revered Imam Reza's holy shrine in the northeastern Iranian city of Mashhad on 5th of April, when a man in his early 20s stabbed three clerics. One of them has attained martyrdom instantly, and others succumbed to his fatal wounds later on in a hospital. The third person has survived. The assailant's identity was not disclosed by the authorities in the city of Mashhad, but local media identified him as Abdul Latif Moradi, an Afghan national who had illegally crossed into Iran from Pakistan last year. Moradi was immediately taken into police custody. The two martyred individuals included Mohammad Aslani, a senior cleric who was volunteering with the shrine in the holy month of Ramadan, and Mohammad Sadiq Darai, a 26-year-old cleric who breathed his last the day his national identity card was expiring. Both have left behind their loved ones, including small children. The graphic videos of the incident, shared widely on social media sites, showed the victims lying in a pool of blood in the main courtyard of the shrine, which is a popular pilgrimage site in the Islamic Republic of Iran. While the gory incident drew widespread condemnation, the reaction of officials in Iran was extremely measured, for fear of backlash against the Afghan refugee community living in the country. No threats were issued and no refugees were deported, unlike what you hear in some foreign media outlets. In turn, a senior government official in the city of Mashhad warned against playing into the hands of the enemy. Afghan scholars based in Iran also unequivocally condemned the gruesome incident, saying the assailant, inspired by the Takfiri thought, did not belong to them. Senior Afghan politicians such as former chief executive Dr. Abdullah Abdullah and a spokesman for the Taliban, Zabihullah Mujahid, also condemned the cowardly attack. But the mischief mongers behind the incident were already ready with their murky games to vitiate the atmosphere and stoke tensions and discord between the two neighboring countries. The soil under graves of the two victims in the city of Mashhad was still wet when a flurry of videos took social media sites by storm, purportedly showing Afghan refugees being ill-treated in Iran. One of the videos showed a group of unruly men bashing two young boys, with police trying to intervene. The Twitterati alleged that it was Iranian men beating Afghan refugees without any evidence. Another video showed a man filming a young Afghan boy whilst harassing him, a horrible prank indeed. It's unclear where the video was shot, but what's clear is the motivation behind its leak now. One post on Twitter alleged that Iranian forces were harshly beating Afghan refugees and forcing them to leave the country. On analysing the video carefully, it appears that the video has not been shot in Iran, and the uniform worn by the assailants does not belong to Iran's police force. The unverified video sparked angry protests in Afghanistan, with a group of unknown men attacking Iran's embassy in the city of Kabul and Iran's consulate building in the western Afghan city of Herat. They hurled stones and smashed security cameras at Iran's embassy in Kabul. In the city of Herat, they tried to barge inside the consulate building, but the bid was thwarted by consulate guards. In contrast, Iranian officials refused to join the circus, calling on the rulers in Kabul to ensure the security of Iran's diplomatic mission in the war-ravaged country and uphold the rich history of brotherly relations between Tehran and Kabul. In a beautiful gesture, Iranian President Dr. Ebrahim Raisi joined a group of Afghan students in Tehran for iftar ceremony, sending a clear message to troublemakers that their bid to pit Iranians and Afghans against each other was not going to work. Iran's special envoy for Afghanistan, Hassan Kazemi Qomi, warned against attempts to sow discord between Iranians and Afghans and affirmed that foreign actors were indeed behind the protests. Iran has for the past four decades played host to one of the largest and most protracted refugee situations in the world. Iran is home to some 4 million Afghan documented and undocumented Afghan refugees, 1 million of whom fled their home country after the Taliban's sweeping takeover and the botched exit of the U.S. military forces from Afghanistan last August. According to aid agencies, around 4,000 to 5,000 Afghan refugees have been streaming into Iran each day in recent months through informal border crossings, and they have been embraced with open arms despite Iran's own limited capacity due to crippling U.S. sanctions. Iran's assistance to the war-weary Afghan refugees has been largely without any international aid at a time when rich Western countries have erected walls to prevent the entry of Afghan refugees into their countries. From prioritizing the vaccination of Afghan refugees to providing them with equal educational opportunities, Iran's approach to the Afghan refugee community has been marked by compassion and by humanity. Top United Nations officials have acknowledged the role played by Iran in alleviating the suffering of Afghan refugees, whilst urging the world to share the burden. The Norwegian Refugee Council, an independent humanitarian organization, provided assistance to refugees across the world, also commended Iran for welcoming with an open arm and hosting millions of displaced Afghans for the past four decades. In a statement recently, the Norwegian Refugee Council called on the international community to step up support for Iran and urge rich nations to ramp up aid and keep their borders open to people fleeing conflict. While Iran, which shares a 572-mile border with Afghanistan, has, in line with its refugee policy, provided necessary assistance to Afghan refugees. But Iran has also continued to remind the international community of its responsibilities towards the people displaced by the 20-year failed military U.S. adventure in Afghanistan. During a recent phone conversation with the Taliban's acting foreign minister, Amir Khan Mottaqi, the Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian said, "Millions of Afghan brothers and sisters living in Iran for the past 40 years have always been provided with necessary services." The top Iranian diplomat Amir Abdullahian touched on a wave of malicious, calculated and false propaganda on some social networks, saying it is spread by those enemies and opponents of good relations between Iran and Afghanistan. Hossein Amir Abdullahian said, the Islamic Republic of Iran has a positive and constructive view of Afghanistan. He added, Iran's exchange of delegations for cooperation between the two countries, sending humanitarian aid, and keeping its mission active in providing services to the people of Afghanistan has been within this framework. Iran's envoy to the United Nations, Majid Takht-Ravanchi, speaking at a UN Security Council session on Afghanistan on 27th of January this year, asserted that Tehran had done all in its power to support the Afghan refugees over the past four decades, despite harsh sanctions. Takht-Ravanchi said the financial constraints due to US sanctions were impeding Iran's efforts to assist incoming refugees. According to estimates, more than 96% of Afghan refugees live in Iranian cities, towns and villages alongside their Iranian host communities, while 4% put up in more than a dozen settlements managed by the Interior Ministry in collaboration with the United Nations Refugee Agency. While troublemongers are busy fomenting trouble, Iran continues to do whatever it can to support the Afghan refugee community, as it has done for the past four decades. There definitely are issues, but it is not the way they want you to believe.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered on April 12, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the government officials of the Islamic Republic. In the Holy Quran, God says, "Thus do we deliver those who have faith." Is a good news for us. It means that by praising God, asking for His forgiveness, acknowledging our sins, and apologizing to Him, we too can achieve salvation. So repenting is done for committing a wrong deed. and for not doing things that we must have done and for bad management. It is necessary for both these things. The point that exists is that we refer to the executives of the Islamic Republic as mas'ul. We describe them as mas'ul, that as mas'ul. What does mas'ul signify? It signifies that we will be questioned, literally meaning the one who is questioned. For what? For the things that we did and the things that we did not do. Of course, in the common political language of the world, such questioning is conducted by people. But more important than that is God's questioning. This is more important in the Islamic Republic. Of course, people's questioning is important as well, and this is a pillar of religious democracy.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Having a sense of responsibility towards the people is one of the pillars of the Islamic Republic and democracy. But much more important than this is having a sense of responsibility before God. O God, bestow your mercy on me when my reasoning fails before you, when I cannot find my tongue to give you answers, and when my mind makes a mistake when you ask me a question. Things are like this on Judgment Day. They will question us, but we will have no answers. We might have prepared some arguments, and we express them, but they are rejected. Then we notice that our reasoning is not correct. If they ask us, why did you do this? Why did you not do that? We might have something to say, and we express it, but it will be rejected. O God, bestow your mercy on me when my reasoning fails before you. When I cannot find my tongue to give you answers, and when my mind makes a mistake. When you ask me a question, this is in the holy supplication of Abu Hamza al-Thumali. Things are like this.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.